now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Right. Hey, hey, everybody out there. Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to another broadcast. There we go. Get the tongue working. Reclaiming authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, reclaiming and remembering that which you have always been and who you are. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you'd like more information about me, or I invite you to leave me one of your comments about tonight's show, visit that website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, or my own personal website at www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. Okay, and I always look forward to reading your comments. Well, welcome to tonight's show. It's entitled All Knotted Up, Untangling Transformation. And we'll have some fun with this because it's a realization that, you know, if you're like me, you get frustrated with knots. And like, how do we undo them? And it's the perfect metaphor for what we're going to be talking about tonight in terms of untangling in a transformative way the illusions or disillusions in our lives, that what we think is real or important or essential is not really when we compare it to who we are as a soul. So I will say more about that. But I also wanted to say that just in case you can't spend the entire hour with me this evening, and no worries, these broadcasts are podcasted. In case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And these broadcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon Music, as well as this particular show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM, that's out of New York, on the weekends. And just in case nobody has said this to you yet, welcome to June. Can you believe it? We are in the month of June. The kids are going to probably be out of school by the end of the week or next week, and graduations are going on, or it's what the kids that I counsel tell me, it's now referred to as a moving up ceremony. You know, those kids who are graduating or moving up from elementary to middle school to high school to college, and then college out into the world and so forth. I still call it graduation because I am old school, but a moving up ceremony, yeah, I'll go with it. And, you know, in a couple of weeks, we'll have Father's Day, and then right around the corner, you know, the first day of summer will be here. So if you haven't started already, please get out there and do your Christmas shopping, because it's going to be here before you know it. You heard it here first. Well, anyway, I am very happy to be with you here this evening and every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I also like to say that each and every one of these broadcasts are dedicated, and I mean dedicated, to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. You know, and I place this all within the context of our relationships with ourselves and others and God or the divine. So why is this integration so important? Well, let me put it this way. One of my teachers long ago, Harold Koenig, MD, he's the director for the Center of Spirituality and Theology and Health in North Carolina, and he's also the professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences, also in North Carolina. Well, back in 2008, he wrote a review in the Canadian Journal of Psychiatry, and he wrote that there are many ways in which our religious and spiritual beliefs and practices may be important resources for coping with illness. And of course, being a medical doctor, of course he would look at it this. So what are these important resources for coping with illness? So in other words, some research shows the connection between our beliefs, our sense of well-being, and so forth, such as positive beliefs. Or how does religion and spirituality provide us comfort during just distressing times? And what about this inner strength that we gain from our religion or spirituality and meditation and prayer, just to name a few? Now, improving your spiritual health may not cure an illness, but it will help you feel better, you know, because there's also several ways that spirituality can support our mental health. You know, we might find a higher sense of purpose or a deeper sense of peace or a stronger sense of hope and meaning in our lives. And we may even experience more confidence or self-esteem or better self-control. So there are many positive outcomes, health-related outcomes related to the integration of our mental health and our spirituality. And actually, this is where I come in, because I have a keen interest in helping people live authentic lives by helping them find their courage, courage that I know is within them, to be able to reclaim that which has always been in them, and to reclaim who they have always been and are. Now, because I have a solid belief that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life, I'm a strong proponent that everybody brings into this world their giftedness, their skills, their talents, their strengths, their character traits, so on and so forth, their personalities, you know. And how we live out, let's just say, our giftedness is in and through various relationships, because relationships give us a context in which we live. And this aspect is very important when considering who we are, because although we may have similar gifts or similar skills or talents or strengths or character traits, no two people express these identically. In other words, each of us have a this-ness about us that which cannot be duplicated. Okay? You know, and people can try and imitate how other people do things. Okay? Isn't that the greatest form of flattery? You know, imitation? But no one has the ability to be able to duplicate us, because within us, and I mean everybody, what lies within us is what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as hecheitas. It's a thisness. It's a uniqueness, if you will. Or the way I describe it to kids and teenagers is, you know, it's like a thumbprint. You know, no two thumbprints are alike, but everybody has a thumbprint. Okay? No two gifts and skills and graces and personalities and all that stuff, you know, we all have that. But no two are alike, because you may have the same skill as the next door neighbor, but you're going to use that skill according to your hecheitas, your thisness, your uniqueness. And that's what makes you very special, and what often leads us to begin looking inward to discover who we truly are as a soul. And therein lies its importance of the realization of who we truly are. But unfortunately, millions of people never had a chance to discover their uniqueness, because society still pumps out these messages that, you know, for us to really find ourselves, they tell us to look in all the wrong places. You know, we're told to look for our thisness in the externals of life, or try to find, you know, who you truly are in the accumulation of things or your accomplishments or your accolades. But this is not where our thisness and uniqueness and hecheitas is to be found. Instead, the full expression of who we are is to be found within the deep realization and full experiences with ourselves as a soul. And yet, what often presents a huge challenge to this realization comes whenever we start to experience really deep physical, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual wounds. And, you know, there are times that sometimes we go along in life. We're minding our own business, and maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, you know, we end up becoming wounded. And as a result, we may feel like we need to hide our giftedness because, well, we don't want to be ridiculed. Or we're so wounded, we have forgotten how to use our gifts and our strengths and skills and all of that. And we often give up and we give in to those labels and stereotypes that others want us to be something for them, so they feel good about themselves, instead of allowing everybody to live according to their achaitas, their thisness. Okay. Or, you know, maybe we've pushed our giftedness way down so that others can see it, like I said a little while ago. And it's kind of interesting that, you know, whenever we put our gifts and skills and wounds and everything else, you know, we put them in the context of relationships, because that's where our wounds happen, in and through relationships. And we don't have to be looking too far for, you know, what relationships you're talking about, because these relationships just might be within our own families. Or what about the people you work with? Or what about within institutions? What about your friends? See, we assume that the people who are supposed to love us the most just might be the ones who have hurt us. Or, let's flip it around here, we just might have been the ones who hurt them because of their unhealed wounds or our unhealed wounds and underdeveloped sense of selves. See, we're guilty of this too. But still, you know, all is not lost, because there is a tremendous power in seeking healing and inner transformation and the direct realization, the direct experience of ourselves as soul. Because when we transform, we also are going to transform others by our presence, our grace, and our understanding. But first and foremost, forgiveness and kindness and compassion begin with how we really treat ourselves. And really, this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. And you've, you know, for those of you out there who have been listening to me for some time, you know, say the word with me, namaste. And that's how I can sum up what is reclaiming authenticity, namaste, which my rough translation is, because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to see your lighted soul of who you are, even if you don't see it in yourself. So why is it so important to remember who we are and who we always have been? I mean, does it really make that much of a difference in our lives? Well, the answer is yes. It does make a difference whether or not we remember who we are. So let me put it this way, okay? Would you rather know the truth of who you are and embrace the fullness of who you are, or continue living in a state of misery and disappointment and always chasing after things or relationships or whatever that simply do not satisfy the deepest longing of your soul? When's the last time you just sat with your soul? When was the last time that you quieted all the noise around you and listened to what your soul says to you? Now, in all fairness, okay, scientific knowledge, okay, for example, and this is just an example, okay, scientific knowledge, great, okay, it does provide humanity with some wonderful benefits that enhance our quality of life. And I'll be the first one out there to say, you know, thank God for medication. Thank God for medical procedures and surgeries and rehabs and so on and so on and so on. But, you know, for all of its benefits, science is one of those fields that just cannot fully understand, let alone explain, matters of the soul. And this is because its knowledge is based on what can be measured or verified through, say, a quantified but limited scientific method. It is good, it is very good, but it's limited in matters of the soul. Now, in the 90s, science started to really study. It really just sat up and started to take notice, you know, the effect of being religious or spiritual and what kind of an effect that had on, let's say, lowering blood pressure through meditation or prayer, or increasing happiness, or one's sense of well-being and life satisfaction, or helping people, let's say, facilitate their grief more easily than without it. And that's just to name a few studies. But science really got in on this and just wanted to know, you know, what are the benefits to being religious and spiritual? And I came along and I want to know the benefits to mental health, because that's my particular field. And it has wonderful, wonderful benefits. Okay. So when it comes to matters of who we are, that is, as souls, our direct experience of who we are and our connectedness to one another and our connectedness to God are far superior to knowing only the externals or the forms of who we are, such as a body, okay, or a brain, or whatever, okay? And, you know, this is not without effort. There's much understanding and awareness that goes into, let's just say, dissolving everyday illusions and limitations to who we are, especially when, as I said, other people would want us to be something for them instead of encouraging everybody to discover who they are for themselves and their gifts and their skills and so on and so forth that they have brought into this world, and especially to discover ways to heal humanity. And this is exactly the topic for tonight: dissolving the illusions that can be characterized as knots in a scarf or another garment. Okay, and that's just a very powerful metaphor. Because, you know, one of the things I run into the most when counseling others is this need to let go of former concepts and philosophies and expectations or assumptions that no longer serve them. Okay, and trust me, we all have concepts and philosophies and expectations and assumptions. Okay, but what are the ones that no longer serve you? You know, call it stinking thinking or call it cognitive distortions, you know, but a lot of times what we think is real is not always the case. Okay, now stinking thinking is a term often used in the 12-step programs of AA, you know, to refer to the negative patterns of thought that add fuel to the fire of addiction. And it's these thoughts that sabotage one's ability to be able to see the world clearly and take responsibility for your actions. Okay, I'm going to take it much, much deeper than that. Because a lot of the times, the process of healing involves an awareness of these inaccurate but very personal beliefs that no longer serve us, you know, in healthy ways, to really see them for what they are and to call them out as, this is keeping me back. This is hindering me. This is a limitation. This is, in fact, an illusion. It's very discouraging. And we have to let these things go. Okay. One of the things, or I should say, a great example of assumptions that really catch us up. One of my favorites is, let's just say that you're at work and you walk into a room, you know, with a lot of people talking and laughing. But the minute they see you, you hear crickets. Everything's quiet. Everybody's looking at you. And you're just, okay, well, I wonder what's going on here. But you immediately assume that, well, were they talking about me? Were they making fun of me? Did I do something wrong? Why wasn't I invited? You know, and we just run with those assumptions. It's not true because we never verified it, you know, but we just take and run with it, okay? Well, you know, those kind of instances and more, when we really get caught up in our assumptions, especially, you know, the distorted assumptions, is that we can really come away from an experience feeling all knotted up and unsure as to where to turn next. Well, speaking of knots, okay, have you ever had knots in your shoelaces or knots in your stomach? Or what about your charging cords for your iPhone or your iPad? They get knotted up all the time, okay? Or headphones or earbuds, you know, whatever, okay? Anything that has a cord, it's going to get knotted up. And we have all been there. Now, despite the frustration, next time you encounter one of these knots, think on this. You know, these knots have something valuable to teach us, especially if we're going to use this metaphor to gain a deeper understanding of how we can undo the mental, emotional, the physical, and even the spiritual knots that distort our perception and keep us focused on external forms instead of looking inward and directly experiencing who we are as a soul. Now, is that easier said than done? Well, we'll see. Okay? You know, it's interesting how often, you know, we describe who we are as a soul by using, let's say, external language or forms and names, you know, such as what we experience through our senses. You know, that is what we see and hear and touch and taste and smell. And this is something that I believe occurs more frequently in, let's say, Western religions and spirituality, in that we almost take for granted the soul. We just assume that it's there. And, you know, we don't really pay a whole lot of attention to it until it's time to die. And then we hope that the soul will do its job and carry us to heaven or, you know, wherever. Well, I believe we can have a little bit more direct experience of who we are as a soul, okay? Because we're not bodies that just so happens to have a soul. It's just the opposite. We are souls who have taken on a body, who have taken on a form in this life. And when that form or that body is no longer useful, it goes in the ground or can be cremated, okay? But the soul lives on. The soul continues. But that's ultimately who we are. Now, equally interesting is that our existence as soul is something that has to be experienced by the soul, you know, such as experiencing, let's say, for the sake of argument, the grace of God, in order to be of knowledge to the soul. Okay, remember, spiritual truth is imparted life to life, soul to soul. I mean, for example, to come to the realization of who we are as souls that are vast and eternal, we must go directly beyond our limited experiences, beyond our senses, and move beyond the forms and the names associated with those forms in order to embrace the truth that ultimately we are a soul and we are one with God and everyone and everything. Now, my teacher in India once shared with me a teaching involving the Vedanta concept of laya, which means to dissolve, especially to dissolve the delusions of the mind and our perceptions of our very limited experiences. And he states that the brain takes in all the information through the senses. You know, that is the thalamus. Okay, that's how we're hardwired. So the thalamus takes in everything that the senses say, okay, I see this, I hear this, I taste this, I touch this, I smell this. And then it says, okay, got to pass this on. And where does it go next? It goes right to the brain. Or I'm sorry, right to the mind. Okay, and this is where the interpretation of what we have seen and heard and tasted and touched and smelled comes in. Based on our previous experiences, is this a good smell? Is this a bad smell? Is this a good thing I'm seeing? Is this something horrific and I don't know what it is? Okay? And what I'm touching, is it soft? Is it pleasant? Is it hard? Is it aggressive? And all those things. It's all interpreted by the mind. But for all of this, and all of these senses can in no way reveal the truth of our existence as a soul. So one of the, you know, the favorite analogies that my teacher in India loves to use, you know, he says, like, suppose you walk by a demolition site where workers are dismantling a house. And once the house has been demolished, you know, they will be left with bricks Okay, assuming that it's a brick house. Okay, and if the workers would even get out the sledgehammers and dismantle even the bricks, now they're left with clay, or let's say the original state of the house. Now, to the mind that's taking us all in and interpreting this, the mind is saying, okay, the house and the bricks have been dismantled, and they're no longer objects to be seen or held or heard and so forth, because they have returned to their basic substance, that is clay. So, the key to dissolving this delusion in our minds of what we can see and hear and feel and taste and smell as real is to recognize that an object, or even a person's original state or substance. And as a result, when we can do this, we start to go beyond form. We start to go beyond the limitation. We start to see what truly needs to see and be seen. We are the witness to all that. So let's bring all of this, this idea of understanding or seeing things in their original substance, into the world of humanity, okay? So we, at our base substance, or let's just say our base existence, are souls. We're not the bodies that we see when we look in the mirror. I mean, yeah, we see that. We think this is the end-all, be-all of who I am. That's not true, okay? We have a body, yes, that needs to be cared for. It needs to be fed. It needs to get rest. It needs to be given medicine when it gets sick or diseased. But at the end of the day, we are truly souls. So now let's take this concept of going beyond the form one step further. You know, perhaps all of humanity's problems and its violence and everything that's out there in the world today, perhaps those problems come from not being able to see ourselves and others as souls. Instead, we just might see the opposite. You know, let's say we tend to focus on the externals, you know, the skin of a person, the gender of a person, the age of a person, the height, the weight, and all of this. And all of these externals have created these isms in our lives. You know, we have ageism, sexism, colorism, classism, elitism, and so on and so forth. But when we can dissolve these illusions of the mind and see one another as souls in various bodies, we begin to understand one another in a whole new way. For truly, we are all souls connected to one another. Now, many theologians and scholars and scientists down through the centuries have struggled to espouse the most accurate definition of what the soul is, let alone what is our relationship to ourselves. So without trying to muddy the scholastic waters, you know, my definition of the soul is this. It's the purest essence of ourselves that exceeds all physical, emotional, and psychological limitations. It strips everything else away in our lives, and it is the soul that is the divine mirror, the soul of the universe. Okay? See, the soul is not just something we have as a result of being created, let's just say, but instead, the soul is who we are authentically. We're not merely bodies that have souls. We are divine souls who have bodies. And in a sense, our mind and body provide this form. Okay, but it provides a form to our soul, which is formless. And with all this, as beautiful painted arrow, Joseph Rael, whom, by the way, happy birthday, dear Joseph, 90th birthday. He describes it in terms of, you know, and having the form of breath, matter, and movement. And this is what, you know, gives meaning to our soul, meaning to who we are, our breath, our matter, and our movement. It helps us understand that we are ultimately one with God and one with each other. Okay. Now, you know, it's also quite interesting that whenever we listen attentively to our soul's cry, we become aware that everything we truly desire can never be reached by the mind and body alone, because these are, let's say, driven by the ego, or selfishness, or fear, or pain, or pleasure, and so forth. Now, this is not to say that the mind and the body are all evil, and that the soul is all good. You know, let's not even go down that road of duality. Okay. Now, it was this kind of duality that drove people in medieval times to punish themselves with physical wounds, believing that they could suppress the ego and their physical desires in order to become more righteous and holy in the eyes of others and God. And again, I believe this is to misunderstand who we are as a soul, because we can never attain higher levels of, let's say, God consciousness through the mind and the body, because these forms are limited. Well, in the second half of the show this evening, we're going to look at more of the practical ways of just exactly how do we dissolve the illusions that are there that keep us wanting to believing that we are nothing more than a body or nothing more than a brain. Okay. So I really want to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So again, if you want to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after this short break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. All right, everybody, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, where in the first half of tonight's show, we've been discussing the theme of who we are as souls and the direct experience of who we are and our connectedness to God. Okay, and this is far superior to knowing only the externals or the forms of who we are, like, say, the body. Okay, and there is much understanding and awareness that goes into, let's just say, dissolving everyday illusions and limitations to who we are, especially when others around us want us to be something else for them, instead of encouraging everybody to discover who they are for themselves, you know, with their gifts and skills and graces and all that stuff, everything that they brought into the world, and to discover ways to really heal humanity. And this is exactly what the topic is for this evening, dissolving our mind's illusions that can be characterized as knots, let's just say, in a scarf or another type of garment. So let's take this topic a little bit deeper with this question. How differently would we live our lives if we fully realized, okay, that's the key phrase right there, if we fully realized ourselves as souls? How differently would we live our lives if we fully realized ourselves as soul? You know, the answer is that our lives would look a lot different than what they appear to be in the present moment, I guarantee you. I also suspect that we would be so empowered to treat others and all relationships with the fullest extent of kindness and love and patience and compassion and grace that the world would definitely sit up and take notice. You know, when I was in graduate school, that was actually the first time I was exposed to Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And it was always taught to us that, you know, Maslow's hierarchy is very good. It's a solid model. It's a means of understanding our human nature and striving to achieve personal goals. Okay. Now, this model of understanding the self follows the logic that our lives go through several stages of attaining personal needs, such as food and clothing and shelter, and there's security, and then there's intimacy with others, and then we pursue goals and our lives, you know, the meaning and purpose and so on and so forth. Okay. Now, ironically, many people today believe that once they attain self-actualization, you know, and that's Maslow's term there, or discovering their life's purpose and motivation and meaning, then they will have found the golden ticket. Okay? They will have finally found their life satisfaction that has long so eluded them. And yet, you and I both know, many people are often met with a harsh reminder that in attaining, let's say, our dreams and ambitions and goals, doesn't necessarily guarantee happiness, let alone finding that inner peace that so many people search their entire lives for. You know, and moreover, despite these accomplishments, people still sense something is missing from their lives. And if this is so, why then do so many people feel empty when they have so much? I mean, what's the problem? You know, perhaps these feelings of disappointment with Maslow's hierarchy really stems from a misperception that it is a flawed model. It's a good model, but it's okay, it needs to be tweaked a little because, follow me with this, perhaps we need to understand that this model is limited, okay, because self-actualization carries us only so far. Now, attaining true happiness and joy and peace in our lives comes not in the accumulation of things or degrees and accomplishments. You know, those things are nice. But rather, you know, our happiness and joy and peace come from the grace of God's presence that can only touch our soul. You know, indeed, there is a greater depth of contentment and forgiveness and love and joy and peace and so on that awakens in us when we fully realize ourselves as souls. You get in touch with who you are as a soul, and I guarantee you that everything that your soul has been crying out for, the happiness, the joy, the peace, a greater sense of contentment, living in forgiveness, living in gratitude, so on and so forth, that will just explode in you in very, very precious ways. And it is through God's grace that we are able to recognize our soul's connection to God and eventually throw off that cloak of illusion. You know, but in all fairness to Maslow, okay, you know, the limitation of Maslow's model doesn't mean that self-actualization is a worthless pursuit. It's not, okay? On the contrary, we all need to have our basic physical needs met. We all need to have a sense of personal security and meaningful relationships, and we all want to have attainable goals in our lives. But we also have to understand that these earthly pursuits are always and should always point us to a higher awakening of self-realization of who we truly are as a soul. Now, I always place this into like a greater context of, again, this is my interest of working with people and healing, you know, intergenerational trauma. Okay, so there is a certain lesson here that I always like to use in this particular subject. Now, the first thing we need to do in healing intergenerational trauma is to step outside our linear thinking of a past, a present, and a future. We need to take a leap of faith. We need to fall into God's grace that opens us up to expanded consciousness. And once we realize who we are then empowered to re-engage Maslow's hierarchy from a more, let's say, life-giving inspiration that focuses not on some ego-driven achievement, but rather a life which seeks to enhance the value and dignity and worth of all relationships. Seeing one another as a soul does that. Remember, truth is imparted, life to life, soul to soul. You know, realized souls are no longer motivated to feed others just for the sake of alleviating their own guilt and filling empty stomachs. But rather, a deeper motivation comes from the awareness that by feeding others, you're also feeding souls with compassion and grace. You know, instead of spending time with another out of obligation, you know, a realized soul instead sees another soul in need of friendship and love. And instead of forgiving others from the perspective of, well, what do I get out of it? We instead forgive because we understand and we're not going to allow people to carry the crippling effects of unforgiveness and bitterness that has on them and us as souls. Because all in all, as we bless others in the physical sense, we're also going to bless them in the spiritual sense. That is a fact. I am so grateful that I had wonderful people in my life growing up who modeled this, that it wasn't just handing out a bag of groceries. It was blessing them with food and always checking in. You know, how is your heart today? How are you today? How are you and God getting along? You know, those kinds of conversations. You know, and in fact, whenever we meet the basic needs in others, I believe, okay, these benevolent acts inevitably nudge us a little closer, a little closer, a little closer to discover who they are authentically as a soul. If there's only one thing that you're going to take away from tonight's broadcast, let it be this. Never diminish even the simplest acts of kindness and compassion and grace, for these are truly the acts that touch the soul and cause all of heaven to rejoice. You know, even a cup of cold water can invoke this. So in a sense, self-realization, realizing ourselves as a soul, actually fulfills self-actualization. We go back out into society to help others because we know the power of transforming. So how exactly do we dissolve these knots of illusion that keep us bound into an incomplete view of who we are? I mean, how do you know that you're ready to realize your truth? How do you know what the differences are between, let's say, form and formlessness, body and soul? Well, the answer is we have to turn our attention inward, first and foremost, and engage in serious meditation and contemplation. As I mentioned in the first half of the show, we have to sit down and be quiet. Listen to what the soul is saying to us. And don't let the mind interpret what it is that you think the soul is saying to you, because the mind's going to interpret it because the mind is limited. But allow the soul to come up, and slowly, 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 over time, that truth of who you are as a soul is going to be revealed. Okay? You know, we begin by listening to our soul, and we sift through the awareness that we have defined ourselves so far pretty much by the forms and experiences of the world that appear as real or truth. And that we have to let go of because they're limited. They are experiences, they are forms, but we have to look beyond the form. We cannot get stuck in form because the soul is formless. We must realize that we're not the physical body, but rather by looking beyond the form, we can see ourselves ultimately as souls. Now, our minds tell us that we are physical bodies, but it is our intellect that comes in and distinguishes what is real from the mind's illusion, while deepening its resolve to surrender that which is not real to God. You know, it's a very simple prayer. Lord, remove the illusions in my life. Take away what I think is real and show me what is ultimately real. Allow me to listen and to hear the soul's voice. What is its cry? What is it awakening? Now, you've heard me say this before, you know, you listen many times, and hopefully if you're looking for some summer reading, here's the book for you. You've heard me say this before, but one of my all-time favorite books is The Alchemist. If you have never read it, go get it. You could download it, okay, Amazon, get it to you by the end of the week, guaranteed, if not tomorrow, okay? But The Alchemist is a great story. Read it every summer. It's the first thing I grab, okay? Now, in reading The Alchemist, you realize that, you know, the main character in the book is Santiago. He's a little shepherd boy or, you know, a young adult, a youth, okay? That he goes on this journey to the Egyptian pyramids to find his what's called a personal legend, you know, his purpose in life. And ironically, his journey has literally, in the end, brought him back to the place where he left initially. But really, the main point of the story is that Santiago has been on an inward journey, because he himself has been transformed along the way. Because all in all, he was clearly not the same person he was when he left at the beginning. He looked inward, and he realized he was and is a soul. And that made all the difference in the world in this story. And it does make all the difference in our lives. You know, just like T.S. Eliot once said, "Let us not cease for exploration." And for all of our exploring will be for us to arrive at a place where we started and yet know it for the very first time. And a prominent theme that runs through The Alchemist is that through the character of Santiago, we realize that when you really want something to happen, the whole universe will conspire so that your wish comes true. We can truly listen to the cry of the soul. We can truly dissolve the illusions of the mind and the illusions of form. And those experiences that we say, well, that was real. It was limited. They are limited. Understanding that we are souls, we're formless. Our bodies give us a form, but we are formless. And, you know, it's this theme that when you really want something to happen, the whole universe will conspire so that your wish comes true, okay? It's that theme that ties into this topic, because this is something I truly believe in, that whenever we pay attention to what has been placed on our hearts, let's say, and we hear the cry of our soul and we commit to it, the entire universe will make it happen. Those desires in, you know, and the cry of our soul are not just there for something to do. You know, there's a purpose in that. There's a discovery. There's a self-discovery in helping others discover who they truly are. The entire universe will make it happen if we remain open and teachable to every situation in our lives. And this is a good habit to get into. Whenever you have an experience, or whenever you start focusing on form, let that be your first red flag. Okay, what's beyond the form? What's real? Is it the house? Is it the bricks? Or is it the clay? Who and what is real? And people. Is it the body? Is it the mind? Is it a person's height? Person's skin color? No. Those things are not real because they're form. And whatever has form has that illusion to it that we get lulled into thinking, well, that's the end all be all. but it's not. So whenever we look at one another, let us see the soul of one another. You know, throughout history, and you know, physical alchemy was and still is always concerned with altering and transforming chemical properties within solid matter, such as, you know, changing lead into gold. That's why people are like, oh, good, I can get rich on this. But, you know, a spiritual alchemy is concerned with freeing, let's say, our vast spiritual self, our soul, which is being hindered within us by the unrefined parts of ourselves. You know, let's say our fears, our limited personal beliefs, our self-loathing, or whatever, anything else that we struggle with that just happens to knot us up. Okay? And spiritual alchemy is vastly more multifaceted and ongoing. You know, it's a continual purification, you know, much in the same way that an ironsmith will turn up the heat beneath a hopper that contains raw mineral or a metal. You know, only that when the dross comes to the surface, it's going to be skimmed off, making the metal purer than what it was before. And this process is done over and over and over again until it's reached its purity. Okay? We too go through, you know, this process of, let's just say, a spiritual alchemy of authenticity. You know, but how often does it feel like when the heat is turned up in our lives, you know, let's say through past or even current events in the world? And when going through this process of a spiritual awakening or of this realization of who we are as a soul, sooner or later, we're going to be confronted with the fact that there seems so much more to ourselves than the reality we are living in and what we have grown accustomed. And as we go through life and depending on our experiences, we're going to start to question what used to be true for us. You know, for example, let's say ever since childhood, you know, we've had a certain way in which we see ourselves or we see others. How do we understand God? How do we look at the world at large? And so on and so forth. And when we have gone through an experience that shakes us up or, let's say, shatters those assumptions, we're going to feel as though nothing makes sense anymore. You know, we don't seem to have a sense of our bearings, let alone, you know, which way is up. And this can all be very unnerving, an unnerving state or place that we find ourselves in, especially if we feel like all of what we have known is starting to crumble around us. It's starting to evaporate. We can become so unsure of not only ourselves, but also whether or not if all that we see is all that there is. But you know what? For all that uncomfortableness, that's actually a very good place to be. Because those illusions need to go. The assumptions that we've been carrying on about how the world ought to work, or, you know, who we are, or, you know, others and so forth, that's not the end-all be-all truth. Until we have that full experience of ourselves as a soul, and until we begin to see others as a soul and treat one another as souls, we're going to forever be slaves to form, you know, believing that the body is the end-all be-all, when in the end, that goes into the ground, but the soul lives on. But, you know, we can weather, you know, say the storms of life, okay? And we may also discover that something greater than ourselves is tugging at our soul. You know, call it a stronger nudge from God or a more intense dimensional energy or even a hunger that resonates deep within by compelling us to go and search to discover the vastness of who we truly are. And as we go along on this journey, we're going to discover that there are things that we need to let go of, things that we identify with, things that once we let go of them, transformation is going to occur, so that we can embrace a higher, more intense dimension of who we are as a soul. So in other words, rising above those negative mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual triggers that keep us from experiencing the fullness of our vast selves, unconditional love, walking in forgiveness, living in gratitude. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you again for spending this hour with me. I do really appreciate it, and just invite you to drop me a line and let me know what you thought. What are your thoughts on this subject? And be glad to return the emails to you. So again, I look forward to spending another hour with you in 2 weeks. And until that time, everybody behave themselves out there. Everybody be good, and everybody please be safe. Take care. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.